nationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author Steve Klein sits down with the most fascinating difference makers in Dallas-Fort Worth. Hear from top CEOs, local entrepreneurs, and key playmakers in business right now with your host, Steve Klein.
Shakespeare said, "Our doubts are traitors and make us lose the good we oft might win by fearing to attempt." Hi, I'm Steve Klein, and welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. In the studio today are two guests who do not fear to attempt. Our first playmaker began his career after Harvard Law School and produced several Broadway plays, while our second playmaker has been self-employed since she was 17 years old. With us today is the CEO of a company with sales of $4 billion, while our second playmaker was featured on the cover of Success magazine. These great playmakers are Shelley Stein. Shelley is CEO of Glazers Distributors, and Tricia Holderman, CEO of Elite Facility Systems. And we're going to begin today's show with Tricia. Tricia Holderman is owner, president, and CEO of Elite Facility Systems and a subsidiary's Elite Home Services, targeting the luxury home market, and cleaning supplies and solutions featuring just-in-time products and supplies for small businesses. Elite Home Services is a 35-year-old housekeeping company maintaining homes for the pickiest clientele in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Elite Facility Systems specializes in cleaning medical, dental, and healthcare facilities with offices in Dallas and Richmond, Virginia. Tricia is internationally recognized as one of the leading authorities in the healthcare facility industry and has provided best practices training consultation throughout the U.S., Europe, Russia, India, and the Middle East. Tricia, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you.
You had an interesting beginning to your career when you had an aerobics job during the summer. So tell us about the aerobics job. It was the summer before college, and how it moved you toward your career and eventually your passion.
I am a clean freak to start with, and in between all the little classes where I was teaching the ladies aerobics, I was always cleaning all the mirrors, the bars, the mats, everything that they used. And one day this lady asked me if I'd be interested in cleaning her house. $50 cash. Like $50 cash at 17 years old is a lot of money back in those days. And went and cleaned her house. The next day, her next-door neighbor called me, and the next-door neighbor, and I went off to college, came back at Christmas time, cleaned houses some more, and decided to take a semester off and made $300,000 my first year and still haven't made it back to college yet.
Well, how did your bedroom look growing up in at home before you were in high school? Was it clean all the time?
It was spotless. Well, my room was probably the most spotless room in the house. So,
now, did you have any idea that this is a career you wanted to choose when you were doing that, or did it come naturally when you were asked to clean?
Absolutely not. I wore braces on my legs as a kid, so I had always had difficulty walking, and definitely wanted to help physical therapy handicapped children, and that's what my dream was to be.
Well, all this kind of was pulled together. You got into your industry actually accidentally because of something that happened back in 1984. Tell us about that.
In 1984, I'm just going about my business, cleaning houses, cleaning offices and homes. Ended up falling into a coma in the middle of the day. My staff walked in.
No warning.
No warning. Well, I had an upset stomach and a headache. Fell into a coma. I was in a coma for 9 weeks and spent literally the next 3 years on life support, in and out of doctors, hospitals. Months at a time, I'd be in hospitals. 68 pounds is what I weighed after the third year
being
in
there. There was nothing to you.
No. And I had already at that point had some like 14 heart attacks. They had opened up my stomach 25 times. I have Crohn's disease. So they were trying very hard to keep me alive. And finally, Dr. Watkin and said, you know, here's what I need to do. I basically need to take everything inside of your body outside. And they did. But while I was in the hospital, I had these ideas of better ways that they should be cleaning the building. I had some ideas on workflow. They were not being very effective. So I have, of course, giving them everything from the ICU to the emergency rooms, the operating rooms. I'm giving advice on how they could do their jobs better. And so when I got out of the hospital, that is what I started doing, was more and more consulting, because now I had the patient point of view as well as the infection prevention.
We were talking before the interview started about what you're doing in sanitary conditions and how you'll go and show somebody exactly how many germs are there. And I would hesitate to have you do that anywhere near where I am, because I'm sure that, matter of fact, I read someplace that where you sit at your desk and your computer probably has more germs than any place else, including bathrooms.
Absolutely. We, the industry as a whole has – infection prevention, by the way, is just – it's a huge field because now you hear about germs everywhere, whereas you didn't used to before. Now you're hearing about the cruise ships that are getting sick. You're hearing about outbreaks of norovirus in nurseries or senior citizens' facilities. We are, as an industry, janitors were never thought of as very important, and now we are becoming just as important as doctors in some cases, because it is about first, you know, harm, and we do want to make sure these patients are not getting infections. But we are getting more and more calls from outside of our industry as well. We've just recently cleaned a nursing home for bed bugs, and we have done a nursery facility for children on an outbreak of norovirus. So there are, we come in and fix those things, but more importantly, if we're on a client in advance, those things are not happening. And that is why cleaning is becoming much more important than it's ever been before.
Well, you were telling me before the show started about going in and taking things apart, getting into everything. A facility went in to clean their facility and it still didn't pass inspection. How different then is a regular janitorial cleaning compared to the healthcare cleaning?
General cleaning is about vacuuming and picking up trash and stuff like that. When it's infection prevention, we literally are wiping every phone cord, every headphone. We are wiping every single thing with the disinfectant. We also have the ability to test instantly, where we hadn't even 3 years ago. But we have a little swab. We can swab anything, stick it in the eliminator. It will tell us how many living germs are on something. We know it needs to be cleaned again. And there are some times where you'll look at something and it could be absolutely spotlessly clean, but the germs are still drastically living on it.
As we were talking about, again, before the show started, about going into hotel rooms.
Yes.
And they do clean those, but they don't do the sanitary cleaning in there. And
Washing
your hands is a good idea if you're in those rooms. Well, one of the things you got involved in was being one of your offices in Richmond, Virginia, working with the Washington Redskins training camp. How did that come about, and what are you doing with them?
My client is a large hospital up on the Eastern Coast, is doing the training service, what do you call it, the training center. They partnered with them. And because I do infection prevention for the hospital, it was just unnatural for me to go over and start working with the Redskins. Got in there and interviewed with them. And I caught so much grief about being from Dallas and would I make sure I did not sabotage their players. But within just a matter of minutes, it was very obvious that I knew what I was talking about and definitely would take care of their players. And so we do clean everything as if it's an operating room. We take every single weight off of every single machine. Every single button on the Coke machines or the Gatorade machines, every mat that they are on, every single thing these players that come in contact with, we disinfect every single night. It is a humongous job to do that.
I can't imagine how long that would take to do a facility like that.
About 20 man hours a night.
That's amazing. And how many people would be working that facility at one time?
Usually about 3 for 6, 7 hours at a time.
And so they do this every single
night.
That's an amazing amount of work. Well, in looking at your website, and by the way, for those that would like to check out Trisha's business and website, it's Elite, F-A-C-S-Y-S, which is Elite Facility Systems, ElitefacSYS.com. And one of the things I noticed there that you use some acronyms, one especially for Elite, Exceptional Leadership, Intelligent Terms, and Employees. But it sounds like you have some great people behind you
Absolutely.
That actually can do the work that you're recommending.
We do. But first off, we are very different in that we do what's called a working interview. So you come and work side by side with a supervisor or a manager for 4 solid hours so that we can see if you're even detailed enough to work with us. There are so many people who think they can be a cleaning person, and they're not. If they don't pick things up and wipe cords and things like that, we, without any training, if that's not a natural kind of a feel for them, you can't train that. You can train them the techniques and the chemicals and things, but you can't train them to be anal, for lack of a better word. We start at $12 an hour if you're working in a hospital. I've got some people over at $20 an hour right now. It's a phenomenal amount of work, but I promise you we're going to take good care of you if you'll do it right, because that's what our clients expect out of us.
One of the things I work with my clients on is understanding different personalities of people.
Yes.
And obviously, as you use the word anal, which is analytical, there's a certain kind of person that enjoys doing that. And obviously, you're screening for those kind of people that enjoy doing this.
Yes.
They're doing it. They're not doing it for the money. They're doing it because this is something they really enjoy doing. They want to make a difference. Well, you were mentioning at the beginning that you were on the cover of the magazine of Success Unlimited, Success Magazine. How did that happen? How did they find out about you and what you've done?
I think they found out about me because I had just been named to the board of Procter & Gamble, and I was 33 years old. And I was the advisory board of Procter & Gamble, so they were starting a new division and needed some hands-on people who could give them some opinions and advice on products that we wanted to use, not only in healthcare but in facilities. It was interesting. It opened up that door. I got on the cover of that magazine. That magazine then opened up to work with the government in the Czech Republic, who wanted to have entrepreneurs on board, that they could have people from the Czech Republic come over here for a year and be interns, and then we would oversee them for a year. These doors just open up for me, and I just keep following through.
So you're traveling. I mentioned a number of areas, especially in the Middle East, Russia, India, those areas. Do you do a lot of traveling, speaking to those groups to help them understand exactly what they
yes,
have to do?
Yes, and that is what we do. It is the consulting side of it. We don't actually do any cleaning in any of the foreign areas at all. That is truly doing what's called the environment of care inspections and evaluations, and then helping to get them to the levels they need to be. We have hospitals in India who are interested in doing the American standards of cleaning, because there aren't any standards there, actually. But Americans do have the best standards of cleanings. And in order for them to attract patients from other countries, they've got to up their standards.
Well, I would think that there's a tremendous future to your business, especially after reading Consumer Reports and seeing the number of hospitals that are not ranked very high because of cleanliness. You were you mentioned about the Washington Redskins and how they thought that you were attempting to get them because you're from Dallas, and you've been all over. You've been all over the world. You travel a lot. What's the difference in the entrepreneurship here in Dallas compared to other areas that you go to?
It's got to be the people here love the fact that you're an entrepreneur. There are many cities that we work in where they actually prefer big companies are the ones, because obviously they have the experience, they have the know-how, they have the staffing. And it's here, one of my very first clients was Mr. Brinker. And, I mean, here I was, this 17, 18-year-old kid, in telling him what I was doing as far as running he would give me advice. I mean, here's this guy you just look up to, and it's like he's telling me what's the next step to go. One of the very first buildings I cleaned was Willow Bend Polo and Hunt Club, and I was very upfront with him. I'm not sure how to clean this, but I'll go learn. I came back, and I said, what do you think of these ideas? And he's like, oh, my gosh, those are great ideas. Nobody's ever done that for us before. Constantly like that. Well, same thing with when I had the doctors and the lawyers. They give me advice, they encourage you, and they really don't want you to stop. There were many times when I really probably should have quit cleaning altogether and gotten just a real job. But they would say, you know, here's what you need to do. Here's how you need to do it. When I came back from my illness, which truly took me a total of 5 years to recuperate and get back to the job the way that I had been, I didn't have the money to do a high-rise office building. I went back to my vendors and explained to them that I was going to need some products. They were like, go right ahead. Take whatever it takes. We'll let you pay us back as you need to. On the flip side, I went to the client and said, yes, I can do your high-rise building. I'm not going to make payroll on the 15th, so you'll need to pay me on the 10th in order for me to get through the rest of the month. And they did. So when I truly got back into business, I had clients who helped me get there, and I had vendors who helped me get there. You just don't find that anywhere.
And that's Dallas, Texas. We'll leave that on a high note. Tricia, thank you very much for being a guest on Playmakers Talk Show. Tricia Holderman is the CEO of Elite Facility Systems. It's Elite, FACSYS.com. Stay with us. We have more. We have the CEO of Glazer Distributors, Shelley Stein, will be joining us right after this.
Operation Kindness is the oldest and largest no-kill animal shelter here in North Texas. Each day, its staff and volunteers care for an average of 300 homeless dogs and cats in its shelter in Carrollton, plus 100 more animals living in foster homes throughout the Metroplex. Learn how you can adopt, donate, or volunteer with this nonprofit group by visiting their website at operationkindness.org or by calling 972-418-7297. operationkindness.org.
Their names are Vivian, Bryce, Zoe, and Joshua, ages 5 to 12. They are part of a very exclusive club that neither they nor their families want to belong. They've all been diagnosed with some form of pediatric cancer. Each year in DFW, hundreds of families hear the dreaded words, "Your child has cancer." Wipe Out Kids Cancer helps families cope and support researchers looking for a cure. Our mission is simple: to work relentlessly for the day when all children are living cancer-free. Learn more at wokc.org.
And welcome back to Playmakers Talk Show. With us this segment is Shelley Stein. Shelley is president and CEO of Glazers, a third-generation family-owned alcohol distributor and one of the largest privately held companies in the United States, with sales of $4 billion. Glazers operates in 15 states, primarily in the Midwest and Southwest, as well as Canada and the U.S. Virgin Islands, with 40-plus branches, close to 7,000 employees, and 900 beverage suppliers. Prior to joining Glazers in 2010, Shelley was a vice president of global investment banking at Bank of America Merrill Lynch and was senior managing director at Bear Stearns & Company for over 20 years. Prior to Bear Stearns, Shelley served as a partner of the Dallas law firm of Hughes & Luce. Shelley, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You have an interesting background. There's a lot I want to talk about, but one story that I thought was interesting because I've seen it in the news and I watched the TV show Dallas. Tell us about how sitting on an airplane from Dallas to New York caused you to end up collaborating on J.R. Ewing bourbon.
Okay, well, I was sitting on the plane and there was a fellow sitting next to me. And this is 5 or 6 years ago, whenever Kindles had first come out. And I had never seen a Kindle, and he had a Kindle. We started chatting about it, and then it turned out we talked a good part of the flight, and it turned out he was a Hollywood agent. And his name is Jonathan Baruch, and he had an agency there. And I offered him a ride. I had a car service picking me up, and I gave him a ride into the city, into New York City. The next day, he sends by overnight a Kindle to my office. And so we continued the friendship, and then I received a call from him. I did on numerous occasions when he was in town with his various people that he represented in the entertainment business. And he called me to tell me that he had a client in Dallas he was coming to see who was the producer of the TV show Dallas, and that it was the premiere of Dallas, and he wanted my wife and me to be his guests at the premiere. So we did that, and then it turned out that Ken Topolsky, who's the producer, is a big is very interested in wines. So Ken and I became friends, and then I introduced Ken to Bennett Glazer, who is the chairman of the company, and we all became good friends. And then from there, we became friendly with all the cast from the TV show and ended up doing the J.R. Ewing bourbon.
Well, for those who watched Dallas, the original Dallas that started back in the I believe it was late 70s, ran through the early 90s, and now the newest one on TNT, we lost JR a couple of years ago, Larry Hagman, but whenever he went in for a drink, it was always bourbon and branch. Now, there was never any specific bourbon tied to that, but whoever came up with the idea, this was an absolutely fantastic idea to have something like this. And you were mentioning before the show started about how popular it's going to be.
Well, it has taken off, and we're getting inquiries from all over the world, and there are a number of people. I wish I could say I was the one who came up with this, but I did not. But we have a number of creative people inside in our advertising agency who came up with this, and we're really having great success. And at the way it's going, it looks like it'll be, you know, perhaps about a 100,000 case brand, which is considered very successful in the alcohol industry.
Will it be distilled in Kentucky as a Kentucky bourbon?
Yes, it is.
It sounds like it will be a tremendous brand, too. Well, talking about Glazers, Glazers have been around for a long time and doing some research. It started out as a bottling company.
Well, it started out as in the soft drink business, and they were the PepsiCo bottling company. the largest PepsiCo, Pepsi bottling company in the United States.
That here was in Dallas.
In Dallas. And then ultimately, they sold out to the parent company, Pepsi, but not before they had gotten the first liquor license in the state of Texas in 1934.
Right after the end of Prohibition.
The end of Prohibition. So they were the first company in the state of Texas who had a license to distribute alcohol.
And from there, it's just gone nothing but up. So that was – now, they had a pharmacy. Is that
– No. In order – at the time, in order to get the liquor license, you had to be a drug company because it was considered a drug. So the name was Glazer's Wholesale Drug Company. Over time, though, they had some issues where people were looking for drugs that didn't exist at Glazer's. So ultimately, we changed the name, and now it's just Glazer's, Inc.
Well, from looking at some of the background, it looks like Glazer's, over the years, has been a company that has – partner with a lot of firms and acquired a lot too and grown in that way. So do you still look for partners to become a part of your operation?
Well, since I've been there, it will be 4 years in July, we've done about 15 acquisitions. Sometimes we will do we have a few joint venture partnerships with another major distributor that we have in three states. And then sometimes when we buy businesses, we will buy 51% or something like that and buy out the rest over time. So we have a few partners. But ultimately, we end up owning all the businesses with the exception of these joint ventures that we have with another very large distributor.
Glazer's is an interesting company. If you go to their website, which is glazers.com, G-L-A-Z-E-R-S, right on the homepage, not only do you see a picture of Shelley, but you'll see a map that shows where they are located, and you see Canada must be about 15 states. Is that correct?
15 states, the Virgin Islands.
Virgin Islands. You'll see all that on the map, and it's quite extensive. Well, you've had a number of other things occur in your life too. One of which is Broadway plays. We were talking a little bit about that before we started recording. How did you get in the Broadway business? Being a banker and doing that most of your life.
Well. One of my clients in Dallas was a company called Jarrell, which was the largest women's clothing manufacturer in the Southwest, owned by a fellow named Jerry Frankel. And Jerry and I became very close, and I was on his board of directors. And when we ultimately sold Jarrell to Hager, Jerry was a true Renaissance man. I mean, Jerry had horses running, race horses. He did movies. Jerry decided he wanted to spend his time in Broadway shows. So he partnered up with a fellow named Jeffrey Richards, and they've been very, very successful producers. And Jerry asked me if I would like to produce some of the shows with him. So I did, and did a few, and quickly learned that was not my talent, and made some money, lost some money, and decided I was better off focusing at the time on the alcohol business than I was on Broadway shows.
Keeping your money where you know you can make some more. Well, you've served on the board of directors for a number of organizations. One you mentioned is one that's been in the news, also called Men's Warehouse. How did you get involved with Men's Warehouse, and what's been going on, things you can talk about?
Well, I got involved with Men's Warehouse when I was in investment banking, and I took the company public and been on the board about 19 or 20 years. And recently, we had a whole dance with Joseph Bank, and right now we're in the process of acquiring Joseph A. Bank. And I was the two of the directors, myself and another gentleman named Bill Sechrist, we were the lead directors on the transaction committee. So we spent a lot of time on that. I did my Glazer's job during the day and Men's Warehouse at night.
Sounds like you have figured out how to get 48 hours in a 24-hour day with everything that you've been doing. Well, from the information I received about you prior to today, I understand there are one or two things that changed your life. One of them was getting into Harvard Law School. How is that a major impact on your life?
Well, when you're a poor kid growing up in Brooklyn, and I went to college, I went undergraduate to Brandeis University. I was recruited to play basketball. Casey Jones was the coach. So I was really much more focused on sports, and I also high jumped and played tennis. And then met my wife, who comes from a very academic family of six kids, all six are lawyers. And she made me focus on academics instead of sports, told me I had no future in sports, which was absolutely true. And getting into Harvard Law just is a major impact, and was also the first time her father, who we had been dating for 3 years, and I think he finally decided I might be good enough for her because he figured I had some future at that point.
As a result of law school?
Yes.
Did prior to that, was sports the area that you wanted to go into?
No, I knew I had no future. I wanted to go to law school. It was just a question of which law school.
And you got into Harvard Law, and that and the rest is history from there.
Well, it certainly opened up a lot of doors.
Apparently, almost like going to SMU here in Dallas opens a lot of doors for people here in the Dallas area. You are now, from what I understand from the research, Glazer's is the fourth largest alcohol wholesaler in the country.
Yes.
How much has Glazer's grown since you became a part of Glazer's back in 2010?
When I started, we were at $2.8 billion, and now we're at $4 billion.
So apparently, because of what you've done, you've increased the firm. One of the things I read that you are an industry leader in supply chain management, category management, educating employees and customers on how to grow the beverage category. So it's beyond just the alcohol business. It's how you run the business that has become so important for you.
Well, what I did was a little different because there were some issues at Glazer's which required some tremendous change. So I brought in a whole new management team. And historically, these have been family businesses in the alcohol distribution where the people have always been in this industry. I brought in people from outside the industry and people in the industry. So we brought in talent levels of people that, quite honestly, this industry had probably not really seen. So there are people from other great consumer products companies. My chief operating officer had been the number two person at Centex and ran Tom Hicks's private equity portfolio. So he brought insights into things. My chief financial officer had worked for me at Bear Stearns and at Merrill Lynch. So we really changed the way perhaps a lot of the people looked at business, and we've been doing a lot of things. We've spent a fortune on technology, innovation. So we're just doing a lot of things that the industry needed but really had not been happening.
This could be a long question I'm going to ask you. We only have a few more moments left, but how different is the liquor business in Texas compared to the rest of the United States?
Every state is different. You know, there's very complex state laws, so there are uniqueness to Texas. But at the end of the day, you're selling alcohol. You just have to figure out. It's a very intensive logistics business because when you think about it, we have 44 facilities. We have to get the product, not spoiled, to the right place at the right time. It's a complex business.
I can imagine, especially as large as your facility, your operation is. Shelly, thank you very much for being a guest on Playmakers Talk Show.
You're welcome.
Shelly Stein is the CEO and president of Glazer's Distributors. Glazer's is glazers.com if you'd like to check that out. Thank you very much for listening to Playmakers Talk Show. You can also check our website, which is playmakerstalkshow.com, to see who the next week's guest will be. Check our current guests. Also listen to past shows on the website. Again, playmakerstalkshow.com. My name is Steve Klein. We'll see you again next week.
Who will Steve be interviewing next? Find out on Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein every Friday afternoon at 3 on 770 KAAM. Hear this interview again by going to Steve's website, playmakerstalkshow.com.